Hartman, who is an infectious disease epidemiologist and program manager, works for Management Sciences for Health as the global technical lead for communicable disease and epidemic preparedness, and the regional portfolio director for East Africa, so he's busy. In this these capacities, he both provides communicable disease technical assistance and program management support to projects in East Africa, including the Sudan Health Transformation Project, second phase. Dr. Hartman.
Thank you very much. We spent 4 years working in South Sudan. The question that I'm frequently asked is, can you do anything at all in South Sudan after 3 decades of war and a completely destroyed infrastructure? And the answer is yes, but with great difficulty, especially if you're tackling maternal issues. I want to thank the colleagues who worked with me on this study. The Sudan Health Transformation Project, second phase, or two, worked in 14 counties in all 10 states of South Sudan. Our main partner in this was the Ministry of Health, and one of our key indicators was the ability to increase the percentage of women who delivered in a facility with skilled birth attendants. At the start of the project, only 7% of women had skilled birth attendants. The maternal mortality ratio in South Sudan is generally considered to be the highest in the world, and that is simply because there are no maternal services to speak of even today after many years of effort to improve them. So you can see, compared to the rest of East Africa, not doing very well. But obviously, we all agree, skilled birth attendance is a major factor in reducing maternal mortality. The green areas are the counties in which we work. The population was not very big, 1.2 million, but we did have 250,000 women of reproductive age. The entire population of South Sudan is only 10 million, and it's spread out over a huge geographic area. Estimated 2.5 million lives were lost in the conflict, leading to independence. By the way, independence occurred during the course of this project. It really was an honor and a privilege to be a part of that. And actually, it's the second time in the last decade I've been working on the birth of a country. The first was the Islamic Republic of Afghanistan. I worked there from 2003 to 2006. And I can tell you the parallels between Afghanistan and South Sudan are really, really amazing, given that they're totally different cultures, totally different continents. But coming out of decades of war, many of the issues are the same. For those of you who have followed this issue, when we started working in 2002 in Afghanistan, the maternal mortality ratio was 1,850. The recent Afghan mortality survey that was completed in 2011 placed that around 350. So we can see that in 10 years in a country that has a completely destroyed infrastructure, you can compress the amount of time it takes to reduce infant and maternal mortality. So with that as background, I sort of moved from Afghanistan into South Sudan. Our overall goal was to decentralize health services. You have to. The Ministry of Health really is non-functional to a great degree. They have some good people who are really struggling hard to develop policies and guidelines, but you have to rely on the local structure, mainly because transportation is virtually non-existent. We had three results. One is to increase access, the other was to increase demand, and the third was to build capacity of the Ministry of Health. The government of South Sudan, or now is the Republic of South Sudan, adopted the same approach Afghanistan did, which was to develop a basic package of health services to be delivered at all facilities in the community. And thus you see the technical areas covered are fairly much what you would see now in Afghanistan, in Liberia, in the DRC, in Haiti, and South Sudan. You see the parallels for the whole post-conflict fragile state. So when we started out with a facility delivery rate of only 7%, we decided we better identify what the barriers are, why women don't want to have a facility-based delivery, and what are culturally specific, realistic strategies to overcome that. So during fiscal year 11, we did 27 focus groups in 13 counties across all the 10 states. The participants were mothers who were not pregnant, pregnant women, and we included traditional birth attendants. You know, we all agree that TBAs in a setting like South Sudan play a key role. What we found basically were what you would expect, that family traditions are not allowed in the facilities. Women were not allowed to use the positions that they prefer, and that's one of the reasons they stay at home. Lack of involvement of men, really, in the decision. Men generally prefer to keep their women in the home and protect them, but there's also in South Sudan a really serious security issue if you followed the news, and it's not unusual for a woman traveling at night to be stopped by police and raped. They don't like going outside of their homes other than during the day. A lot of mistrust of the facilities, not surprising. Most of them leak, fungus growing up the wall, you know, all kinds of body fluids. Remember when we first started, midwives would throw placentas out the windows for the dogs to get them. That was their medical waste disposal program. The providers tended to be urban and not necessarily understand the cultures where they were working. One of the interesting cultural practices was a desire to smear the newborn with animal fat, which, as you can understand, did not be well greeted by trained birth attendants. So we set to work to try and help overcome some of these barriers, obviously community education. We developed a program for what's called home health promoters, and a big part of their community education outreach is to a big part of their community education outreach is to encourage women, there we go, to come in for facilities and work with the facility staff. And those are the peer educators. So what we came up with were mother support clubs at the drop-in centers. These are women who had successfully delivered in a facility, encouraging others to do it. We did a lot of provider training and education. We found that we had to engage men, not very successfully. Men in South Sudan had a very strict idea of what they would deal with in terms of family life. And by the way, Afghanistan was the same thing. We dealt with that by training both male and female community health workers. And we developed a program of incentives for skilled birth attendants. I will carry on in the interest of time. Well, one of the things MSH has noted for you, those who are aware of MSH know that we've had a long series of programs in leadership, management, sustainability. The current iteration is leadership, management, and governance. Out of that, we've developed a program called the Leadership Development Program, which basically works with, let me try this.
I think it's a connection.
Yes. I just noticed the connection fell out of the computer. I'm talking to you, and the connection just fell out of the computer. So, you know, I'm sort of a techno retrofit dinosaur, but I can see if the connection's laying on the podium, it isn't going to work. In any event, the Leadership Development Program uses the challenge model. You identify a challenge. In this case, in all 14 counties, the challenge is what do we do to increase skilled birth attendance? And we develop work teams which involve both the managers of the facilities and the community members. And that was the key. If you work just in the health system, you're truly not going to understand what the barriers are and how to overcome them. And we trained about two facilitators for each county, and they traveled around, very labor-intensive, going to each community that had a facility with skilled birth attendants. And the results were pretty amazing. In some of the counties, but not all, as you can see, a 7 to 12-fold rise by the end of project in the number of skilled birth attendants. So our skilled birth attendant rate doubled, not too bad if you say we went up 100%, but we're still only at 15%. Nonetheless, we learned a lot. Well, what did we learn? Well, you know, incentives to traditional birth attendants to bring women in to the facility when they're in labor and allow them to stay with the women, not to do the delivery, but to attend to their culturally appropriate issues. You know, I don't think we've still found a substitute for animal fat for smearing on the baby, but, you know, baby oil can certainly do it. Food incentives are really wonderful because so many of the pregnant women don't really get a lot to eat and, in fact, aren't allowed to. So they will come in if they get fed. So we found that overall the program could be successful, needs to be replicated. The problem, of course, after decades of war, there aren't a lot of skilled birth attendants available. And just a little pitch, this is the only project I've worked in that didn't train skilled birth attendants. In Afghanistan, we developed four separate schools for community midwives, 18 months of training. And in 3 years, we quadrupled. We went from 200 to 800 women. And I think that helped reduce that maternal mortality. That is not the case at all in South Sudan. In fact, they've decided to do an over 2-year training program, and there's no funding for the training. But we also found that community education and outreach, and especially engaging men, was really important. I commend to you a review of the leadership development program. The more I work with this, the more impressed I am with the results, because it involves the community and the facility management working together to develop joint approaches. In any event, I thank you. Sorry for the technical glitches.
Thank you for fixing it.
But it's been an honor to work in this program.
Is there any question for Dr. Hartman? Sir.
Thank you very much. Just two questions. You know, Southern Sudan is still a very independent country. There are lots of mistakes that development partners have made in other developing countries. What steps are you taking, or have you taken in this project to ensure that there is government ownership? But most of the time we preach sustainability. We cannot achieve sustainability without ownership. So how much where the government and people of Sudan involved in determining the issues that you just presented? That's question number one. The other one is, we say people prefer the traditional birth attendant. Why do they prefer that? We will find out the root causes of that. Because yeah, we can talk about the civil war, we can talk about that. But what are the fundamental issues
Okay, thank you. Well, those are two excellent questions. I can tell you the Ministry of Health, the government, health services, is not a monolithic structure. It's fragmented and separated. For example, we had tremendous support from the central Ministry of Health. They really wanted this program to go forward. The state Ministry of Health, there are 10 states, it was virtually non-existent. It was brand new. People didn't know what their role was. Money was transferred from the central to the state ministries of health and disappeared. I mean, there were like no staff to work with. And the same was true of the county health departments. County health department's supposed to have anywhere from 12 to 15 staff. When we started, the average was 3. So for the most part, the NGOs, who were the service providers, took over providing the services. We, in fact, paid for about 70% of what would have been government salaried personnel. However, over the course of time, the average number of people at the county health department increased from 3 to about 8. Well, then all of a sudden you can start doing something. So then the Ministry of Health starts taking more responsibility. And that process is continuing now as the local county health departments are built up. In terms of the use of TBAs, I mean, I think that's normal when you don't have facilities or skilled midwives. I mean, the community health structure was the only thing that survived after 30 years of war. And so the TBAs became very, very important people. And we don't want to break that trust. What we want to do is work with it and use it. And that's why involving them is key to increasing skilled birth attendance. In any event, thank you.
I'm nodding my head because Fred and I grew up in the same schools, I think, of thought. And and the reason that I raise the question about if we get people to facilities, what does it mean when you can see that partnership is very important to ensure that both improve.